Hello, and welcome to What Moves Us, the podcast where we ask, what moves us? Or more accurately, what's going to move us in future?
With the Rail Innovation Group's Johanna Randall and Liam Henderson, we look at debates, themes and decisions of the minute that will impact on the way we get about in the future.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of What Moves Us, the podcast where we chat about all the things that move us. I'm Johanna, and for the first time ever, I'm here on my own as Liam is on holiday. And for some reason, he thought it would be a good idea if I did a pod of my own. Well, there is good reason, because I've been a guest of the Rail Industry Association at their Innovation Conference in Wales, which happened last week. It was a whirlwind of keynote speeches, tech talks, exhibitor spotlights, talk pitch sessions and the Future Focus Zone. Throughout the show and throughout the pod, I'll be chatting with our friends and some of our regulars from the Rail Innovation Group and even some of the brilliant innovators that I met at the conference. Well, it was quite a surprise, the conference, because there was a bit of an unexpected surprise, because there was Milda on the stage, who all of a sudden found that she had a new best friend, the Robo Dog. Now, that definitely was something that got everyone's attention, especially as she'd just introduced Darren Kaplan. Well, we couldn't all wonder if this was a sneak preview of what was the future of the conference and what would be happening to rail, or whether it was that the aliens had decided to pay us a visit. Now, I could, as usual, we could put some sort of, like, you know, cheeky comment in here about the government and what they've been up to. You know, had they taken us over again? But we'll wait for that till Liam and Debs are back and we can debate more about the robo dogs. But today is all about positivity and innovation. So without further ado, let's get on with what happened at the conference. So at last, Darren did arrive and he welcomed us to the conference and set the stage for what promised to be an inspiring event. Darren spoke about the opportunity to reset rail. Darren is always positive, emphasising the importance of innovation in addressing challenges and delivering efficiency gains. One couldn't help wonder, though, whether he is just trying a bit too hard, because, you know, rail certainly is finding a challenge despite all the innovation that is happening and what we're going to see over the next couple of days in Wales. But next up, we heard from Nick Millington, the Route Director for Network Rail Wales, who wasn't with us, but he did send us a really good message about today was about the launch of the start of CP7 and the importance of safety and collaboration in overcoming railways challenge. And this was the first time that we heard about one of these key challenges within rail about collaboration. We also heard from Robert Ampamea from Network Rail, Scott Waddington from Transport for Wales, and Rebecca Jeffrey from Uber. Again, that theme of collaboration was coming in, because this wasn't just about sharing the vision of future rail and mobility from people that we know well, but also about learning from others in order to bring about a brighter, more innovative future. There was also lots of opportunities for networking and for checking out some of those cutting edge exhibits. That was one of the really great things about this new venue at the ICC in Wales, in the fact that there was plenty of opportunities to mix with the exhibitors and network with them and find out all about what they were doing. It was then back to the main conference, where we had some tech talks which featured some of the industry giants that we know, like ABB, Thales and Capgemini, who gave us a glimpse into some of the exciting advancements that they were developing for the industry. Wrapping up the morning session, we heard from Charlie Fuller of the Rail Investment Centre for Excellence at Network Rail and Susan McQuarty from Arcadis Business Advisory, who shared insights into cost benchmarking and the power of data-driven decision-making. Now, cost benchmarking and data decision-driven decision-making doesn't sound the most exciting things, but I have to say this was one of the most exciting products I saw on offer at the conference, because it's one of the things that we're always talking about at Rail Innovation Group, about how we can use data. And not only were they using the data and showing it in real time, but they'd also put it into a really clear and innovative data map, which I found actually quite exciting. Before we head into what happened on day two, though, I had a chance to catch up with some of the delegates on the ground where we chatted about some of the key themes at the conference. I mean, I've already mentioned about collaboration, but also about sustainability. And there was certainly a lot of debate about those robots. There was a lot of robots. These were all on display in the Future Zone, which was mainly about universities. Now, there were the scary robocops, robodogs, I should say. That's me thinking about the Terminator and the robocops. But there was also some friendlier ones, which were being used in hospitals and certainly, you know, amongst dementia patients. And they certainly looked like friendly station masters, complete with their fat controller hats. We'll put some of those in the pictures for the podcast. But first up, I had the pleasure of chatting once again with Emily Kent from One Big Circle, a familiar face at Rail Innovation Group, and they are just going from strength to strength. Anyone looking to innovate, get into rail, or be a business success really should study their journey, because they just seem to have got it right from day one. It is all about that collaboration and listening to what customers want. Here's one of our best friends at Rail Innovation Group, Emily from One Big Circle. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Johanna. Really well, yeah.
And are you having a good conference?
Yeah, good. Yeah, we're just at the start of day two. It's been a really busy day yesterday, and looking forward to more of it again today.
Excellent. So what have you seen that's inspiring you here then?
Well, we definitely see a lot more in the digital space, which is really interesting. This is our third sort of innovation conference, and every time we come, there's more exhibitors kind of demonstrating things that are possible as we kind of explore the digital railway and what can come together and what insight can be gathered from different systems and different sources of data and stuff. So, yeah, it's really inspiring to see that area growing as well.
And has that been coming about because you think of like some of the challenges and the themes that we've been seeing? Do you think that's why we're seeing more digital, you know, solutions to what we need to do in rail?
Yeah, I think the kind of the message from the industry, from Network Rail and stuff, is pretty consistent that we need to do more with less, and we need to be forward thinking, and there are big challenges, and the way to meet those challenges is to find innovative solutions and new capabilities and like evolving technologies as well to bring into the industry to help make things sort of easier, smarter. So yeah, it definitely feels like it's following that message that's coming from the rail industry itself.
I was quite struck, you know, because I've been hearing a lot about climate change and resilience that month,
yeah.
But I was also quite struck that it wasn't just about value for money, but it was about that whole cost efficiency and that we need to deliver everything cheaper, and digital's part of that solution.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're very sort of open on sharing what those kind of pillars of the challenges that are facing them in CP7, as you say, like sustainability, net zero, the real challenge of bringing more people and freight back onto the railways as well, and everything, all the benefits that bring to the country as a whole. So, yeah, essentially, it's trying to find all those incremental and dramatic improvements that are gonna have effect on that performance improvement. Yeah. So
obviously, you've been showcasing AVAR here at the conference.
Yeah.
So how have you found that, and what have you been showing to the delegates here?
Yeah. Well, as you guys know at RIG, yeah, you know, you enabled us to do our very very first pitch, which was before, you know, when we only had our first few moments of data on a train, and now we've got the whole country has been mapped, you know, multiple times. There's over a million miles of data been captured, and lots of different data sources as well. So now we're able to show like the whole sort of range of technology that we have on board different trains. So that's really exciting for our own progression. I'm really proud of everything that we've done with AVA. But what's quite exciting to do is be able to share that with sort of all the delegates and other exhibitors that are here as well. So yeah.
So have you been having some interesting conversations with people then?
Yeah, what's good actually, we do the this year and in the last conference, we do a spotlight. So as people, instead of just having people come to your stand to kind of ask questions directly, we also have the opportunity to do a kind of longer sort of 10-minute presentation, but at your stand, where you can kind of show video and different parts of the system as well. And then that always encourages people to kind of come back and ask questions afterwards and sort of delve into different parts of it as well. So it's a good bit of exposure that's very specific for for us at our stand as well. Yeah,
I've really enjoyed those spotlights.
They're good, aren't they?
Because I think it's sort of like it makes you go around and see everybody and have those colourful conversations.
Yeah,
and really get into a product and find out.
Yeah, more about. I think even just the sort of, you know, the sort of physical part of actually just moving around, hearing that as well, rather than sort of being sitting listening to a stage.
Yeah,
it's a different dynamic.
I certainly got my steps in yesterday too.
So it gives it a different dynamic, and I think we've really enjoyed that as well. So that's been good. Yeah, yeah.
So. A lot of your story, I mean, like you've said to us as, you know, sort of like, you know, Rick's always been there as part of that, has been about collaboration. So what would you say to our listeners then, you know, sort of like, you know, about the importance of collaboration and finding people in rail to do that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we touched on the challenges, and we've said consistently throughout, there's not one company and one system that can solve each of those challenges on their own. We've got to be collaborative as an industry and open to those opportunities. To basically bring capabilities together that can form a sort of ecosystem of things that we need to deliver. So from our perspective, we're all about capturing data for the infrastructure monitoring, and that's moving into operations. But we know there's a number of suppliers as well in this room that would be really powerful for us to work with. Some we are already, and some we've just met yesterday. So we need to be open on what that approach is. In a lot of cases, it's not 100% clear what the commercial model is going to be for that. And I think it's good to explore the arc, the possible, and the possible technical solutions, and then explore if it's powerful and beneficial. Together, we'll find a commercial framework in which
to do. How do you convince people, you know, to sort of like just stick with it and say, let's just be visionary for, you know, a period,
you
know,
and
demonstrate it. How do you get over that hurdle?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because you do have to do it at risk. And one of the first things we heard from Network Rail way back when in sort of 2019 was about they wanted to talk with suppliers and SMEs that had skin in the game. And that's what we've always taken away, because I think that implies, like, if you're sort of operating in a way where you've invested time and resource in starting this process, then hopefully it kind of like binds you into that journey as well. So that's always been kind of, so we do basically deliver, we work at risk in some cases, because when I say at risk, it's not a risking capability we're doing, it's more like we don't know definitely yet that we've got an end customer for
which can be quite risky when you're a startup.
Yeah, exactly.
Cash flow isn't exactly your friend at that time.
You don't have a big pot of sort of R&D funding yourself to do. What we've found quite often is we've done something at risk, and then what works really nicely is when we then find some like a FOAC or a, you know, some Innovate UK type funding, which helps, and also as well sort of R&D with Network Rail as well, is like that we use it as an accelerant as well. So we've kind of done some first case kind of integrations and testing out with other suppliers. Then there may be an opportunity to apply for funding to accelerate that.
I think actually that's some good advice there for people that are applying for Innovate UK funding or FOAC or whatever, because you actually do need to do some ground research first, don't you, to be successful.
Yeah.
So I think that's a top tip.
Because then I think you're more likely to get more out of it as a result of that as well. So I think if you hit these sort of, it's different between kind of a standing start and a sort of running into something. You've got a lot more behind you to get that sort of pace of delivery, and working kind of in the technology sort of sector of the industry, that, you know, we can work, because technology is evolving so quickly, we can work at pace to bring the best of our field into the industry, but sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect between the speed that other things happen. So it's sort of that's one of the challenges as well. But I think, you know, there's so much momentum and innovation going on, so particularly as we enter CP7 as well, we hope kind of everything like starts to fall in.
Yeah, yeah,
I know.
It'll
like
continue.
4 days to go or however long it is.
As ever, Emily, always a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you
so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Next, I have the opportunity to connect with a new friend, Phil from Doopy Doo, great name for a product, who's been making waves in the Transport for Wales Accelerator programme. I really love this product because it showed just how collaboration could work between startups and local communities for business and rail benefit. I could certainly see how this could work elsewhere, especially in tourist spots around Britain and rural destinations. So I look forward to hearing about what their next steps will be. So here's Phil telling us about Doopy Doo and what they're up to.
How are you this morning?
I'm quite good. Thank you very much.
So
So Philip is one of our new friends that we've met at the RIA conference in Wales. So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and why I find you so interesting?
Oh, stop it. Sure. So my name is Phil. I'm the co-founder of Doopidoo. Doopidoo is the Pokemon Go for tourism and transport. We take users on a quest across town or their region to discover what makes it unique. So we're talking food, drinks and local attractions. The idea is that users collect cards and venues they visit and rewards through a digital loyalty card that we built in. We are building the concept with in partnership with Transport for Wales and a local authority in Wales called Caerphilly. And the objective really here is probably threefold. First of all, making tourism and exploration more exciting through gamification. Increasing retention by collecting customers' contact details with a digital loyalty card for future marketing campaigns. And finally, a quirky one, we would like to use this digital loyalty card to promote local businesses through a sort of quirky reward system that I'll tell you more about later.
When I saw this, I loved this product. Yeah, I thought it was a really good idea, particularly from a tourism point of view, and encouraging sort of like people to get out more in towns and to engage with local businesses and that. But what attracted you to sort of like apply for the Transport for Wales lab accelerator in the first place?
It's a long story. We were working initially on a product to promote local businesses and try to empower them with a tool that would allow them to get in touch with their customers. And we were really focusing on small businesses to start with. We were getting some tractions, and one thing led to another. We had the tourism board of Caerphilly who knocked at our door, saying that actually the problem with like local businesses we're facing, not knowing their customers, not having their contact details, big castles have the same problems, and they could really do with filling those empty seats during off seasons. So we started working with them, and literally, it was very spooky. I remember talking to the tourism boards, and they were saying, actually, it'd be really cool to do something with Transport for Wales. And at the time, I thought, you know what, good luck with that. I've got no idea who to talk to. And I end the meeting, I go to my car, and I receive a notification from Twitter, have you joined the Transport for Wales accelerator? And I thought, well, that is a bit spooky, Mr. Internet. But, you know, I'll do it. So I did apply, and we got in. And this is how we got started. It was very interesting because Transport for Wales, just like local castles and just like local businesses, have the exact same problem, which is we have users, quite a lot, about a million users recurring annually. We don't know who they are. We don't have any contact details. It'd be fantastic to have a much better profile of those people actually using our train, so we can make the experience really fit to who they are and what they're looking for.
So if I'm visiting Caerphilly this summer, can I download your app?
You will definitely be able to do that. At this stage, you don't even have to download it. It's what we call the web app, so it's still on the web, so you don't have to download it. It's like a website. It's even easier. We are thinking of maybe having an app one day. There is a lot of things that, although an app makes everything looks fancier, there's a lot of things that apps can't do when it comes to SEO and Google search. And it's also a lot easier to access. So we probably will have the two running. At the moment, however, it's a web app, so it's easy to access. And it's probably going to keep it for at least a good 9 months before we invest into the copper app.
So have you now finished the accelerator, or you've halfway through?
We have. So the accelerator started in September. It's a very good accelerator. Went to different accelerators in the past. This is probably what you hear when you listen to podcasts, podcasts about startups, about what's happening in America. An accelerator that makes introductions. It's an 8-week accelerator. What happens is very quickly you are introduced to stakeholders within Transport for Wales. They introduce you to the problems they have, and whatever questions you have, whoever you want to speak to, you've got Barry over there who will make an introduction to the top executive. And through this process, we've been able to build a prototype very, very quickly. In probably 6 weeks, everything was like we had a very clear idea of what we're going to do. And 2 weeks after that, we were able to actually develop the pilots and implement it and do some testing.
So I think when I was talking to you yesterday, you said that you had a contract in place that was going to enable you to continue to develop
yes.
it. So what's next in your story?
It's all very exciting. We did get a contract with Transport for Wales. So over the next 18 months, we will be implementing the pilots with Transport for Wales. In order to avoid putting it in the stations to just keep the pilots within a closed remit and control who's got access to it, we'll not be deploying the app in the stations, but more in office buildings. So as an example, if you go, let's say the BBC, let's make an example. There's BBC in Cardiff. Potentially an employee working the BBC will not be scanning their card in the station, but when they come to work to collect their points. This will allow us to do two things. First of all, confirm what we've done with Transport for Wales. So this pile of digital loyalty card that collect customer contact details and enable them to really get to know who their customers are. But also, this will give us a different advantage. If we can deploy the digital loyalty card in an office building, we'll be in position to provide a building like the BBC, for example, on a report on their carbon footprint on something called Scope 3. I don't know if you see what this is.
No, I haven't. So what is that?
So Scope 3 is a regulation that is coming this year. It requires large companies to report on their carbon footprint, in particular the impact of their employees in general. So if their employee come to work with their car, this has a specific carbon footprint. If they were to all take the train, this will have a different carbon footprint. So technically, all businesses need to report on how much, by going to work, for example, they're emitting CO2 emissions. And obviously, the target for these companies is to reduce that as much. So what we could do here is potentially provide a report to the BBC on how much employees are saving in CO2 emissions by taking the train, which they can use as part of the CSR reporting exercise. It's a very, very hot topic. So we're talking about it with Birmingham University over there. So there's a real potential for something a bit groundbreaking.
So are you doing more, as you develop then, are you doing more collaborative projects?
Yes, we are definitely looking for partners. The more we work, the more we develop, the more we meet people, the more we realize of the scope of applications our initial product has and what we could do with it. We are more and more growing into a sort of big data project that will allow public sector organization to really understand people movement, promoting the local economy, increasing tourism. And I suppose really, all in all, reducing CO2 emissions in the UK. Does that make sense?
Yes, no, it makes perfect sense. And it's really interesting because you're the second person that's mentioned that this morning as I've been talking to people. So I think it's really, really interesting. Yeah. So when we first met yesterday, we were looking at one of the many robots that are here.
Oh, yes.
And that. So what have you found that's been inspiring at the conference?
Obviously, the robot.
Which I found very scary.
Oh, I don't know.
But you think it's cute.
I know. They are really cute. These were the Boston Dynamic robots, and for three years I've been watching videos of Boston Dynamic robots opening doors. This time they were not there, but they also have these human shaped robots that where you've seen videos, people are fighting and trying to take off balance and you can't do it never works. So that was absolutely fascinating to watch. There is a drone over there. Obviously people on the podcast can't see it. But we've had a quick demo yesterday. This company called Arcadis, I think I'm doing some promo for them,
Arcadis are our friends. Everybody's
oh, there
friends.
We go then. They're able to fly a drone above a landscape, and that drone is going to digitize the entire landscape and render it into a virtual environment. But not only that, they're apparently flashing lasers through trees.
That was the presentation they had in the main conference yesterday.
Oh,
as well,
I probably missed this one.
Yeah, I mean, the presentation was amazing. Yeah, it really was. It's brilliant.
We had a very, very bespoke presentation yesterday during the cocktail time. And it's absolutely amazing what they've been able to do. So, there's so much interesting stuff going on here. It's quite exciting to me. Yeah, it's very exciting.
So is rail inspiring you?
It is very inspiring. You know, we're not from the rail industry. We started with a project around tourism and exploration, and then we find this very exciting community of like the rail users and rail, the entire supply chain that is quite passionate about what they do. So it's quite inspiring, yeah.
So as I said at the beginning, I love your product. I wish you every success, and I hope that people that are listening to this, particularly from other regions of the UK, are listening to this and getting in contact with you to see what possibility you could do to boost their tourism as well through rail.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And last but not least, I had a fascinating conversation with Merrin Thomas from Arcadis. Merrin touched on the prevailing themes of sustainability and collaboration that we heard throughout the conference, and we touched on more about the work that they're doing with data. And I know this will be of interest to many people in rail and looking at how we can overcome the challenges of weather and earthworks, given the wet winter that we've just had in the UK this year.
Morning, Merrin. How are you?
I'm very well, Joanna. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you enjoying the conference?
I think it's been really inspiring this year. It's been a great venue, some really great exhibitors and some interesting conversations.
Yeah, because this is the first time we've been in Wales, hasn't it?
It is first time in Wales and in a new venue. And yeah, it's been very, very inspiring. Different space, much more... I think there's a definitely much more... positive vibe about people collaborating, so it's great.
So, Merrin, you're from Arcadis.
I am.
So, what do you do at Arcadis?
So, in Arcadis, I look after the Network Rail account. So, I look after the strategic relationship we have with Network Rail to bring the breadth of experience that we've got across Arcadis to support Network Rail in meeting its challenges.
And of course, you're also from Scotland.
I am indeed. So, and a Welshman as well. So, so I cover the Celtic nations beautifully. So,
and we're doing that both. We're
exactly. That both. So we're both covering that. So it's pretty good.
So everybody's been getting really excited about the product that you showed yesterday at the conference and some of the drones and that. So would you like to tell our listeners about that and also how it's meeting the industry challenges?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. So a lot of people just see Arcadis as just a design and engineering, but we're a lot wider than that. So yesterday in our keynote, we shared work that we're doing with the Rail Centre, Rail Investment Centre of Excellence, around about BenchSmart, which is about collecting benchmarking cost data that helps us make better decisions around about infrastructure investment and where we use our money and how we can improve and become more efficient. And that's something we've done in collaboration with Network Rail. And it's been really interesting, the positive response that we've had around that. And as it's rolled out across all the regions, that's only going to increase the amount of data we've got that we're able to make even better decisions. But on our stand, we had our drones where we're looking at using autonomous vehicles to collect survey data, information about the infrastructure. And I have to say, even I was slightly worried by what that could do. But you know, the impact that has in terms of taking people out of harm's way, but actually the amount of data that we can collect that allows us to design or look after the infrastructure is in a data-rich way is huge.
And I think that's really interesting in terms of the challenge of that, because everybody has been mentioning, because I was picking up a lot about climate resilience and cost effectiveness, but everyone's now saying, just because we've matured in data now, and that, you know, how important data is to meeting those challenges.
Yes, so I think that was one of the interesting things with talking to Network Rail R&D, was about that whole piece, how they've moved the rail technical strategy on, and data enabled has moved out of it because it's the underpin for everything. So it's now very much more focused on about how do we use data to make decisions effectively. So it's less about collecting it, what do we do with it, and how do we turn it into useful decision making tools. And so that piece is it, and the focus then to flick onto passengers, but now freight, which is really quite exciting.
And we're the robots coming to get us again.
Yes. Well, this dog has been around many times, hasn't it, today? But it is that whole bit about how we're actually starting to use data to make ourselves more efficient, make ourselves make better decisions. The other piece is about personal safety. You know, how do we as consultants not have to put people on to do surveys, or what can we do with that? So it touches many different aspects of delivering.
And I think it's interesting that you mentioned that you were addressing a specific challenge by Network Rail. Yeah. So how important is, you know, like talking to the client and having that collaboration piece?
It's huge, actually. What we don't want to do is start developing solutions looking for a problem. We want to be, you know, there's a problem when we're developing a solution that fixes it. And so therefore that collaboration with the client is massive. It's really, really important. And I think one of the things that we're keen that our client understands is you don't have to come up with the answer. They, as a client, don't have to come up. But the power for the supply chain is being really clear on that articulation of the challenge or the problem, because we've got capability across the supply chain to probably, you know, to find the solution in a cost-effective way. But having that direction is really, really important.
Yeah.
And then collaborating to say, is this getting there? Is this getting there? How are we moving that forward? So, you know, we've got colleagues from our intelligence business today who are bringing that experience from the water sector, aviation, America, the Netherlands.
Oh, and that's really great to hear. It's all that
learning coming to the UK. So it's
so have you found anyone new to collaborate with then at the conference?
Well, indeed, we have. So there's two people. There's a firm called Gripple that have developed a really interesting product for the electrification market, and that takes time and effort away, but it's really important that, so we've arranged a knowledge share back in with our teams across the UK, because unless you know about it, you don't design for it, you don't build into your thing. And then there's a number of firms around about how they use AI and machine learning, and it's about, well, how can we work together to collaborate to create that ultimate solution. So
we can't all do it all, can we?
And firms like Arcadis don't want to do it all. We want to actually collaborate, because there's elements, you know, we were talking to one firm this morning, and it's that whole bit that they've got the solution around about how they capture the data, but we've got the business change and how you implement it into organisations. And so there's a strong collaboration.
That's a really important...
How you make it sticky, how you make it...
Because I think a lot of startups and SMEs find it really difficult to deal with all that governance and sort of like all the quality standards and that.
Correct. And the bit that, you know, if we as Arcadis can help them, so we work with a lot of SMEs for that very reason, because, you know, they're agile, they're great, they've got great ideas, great solutions, and actually we can help them build that into a final solution for a customer. That's perfect, and you know, we're very pragmatic, and you know, it's not just Arcadis at the head. We will bring our SMEs with us and say, you know, they're part of our solution. So
that's fantastic. That's really interesting, Tim. Thank you for talking to me.
No problem, Joanna. Thank you.
As you heard with all my speakers, I was obsessed with those robots. And we found ourselves on opposite ends of the spectrum when it came to the debate over whether these robotic creatures are cute or downright scary. But there is a compelling argument about their utility in hazardous environments where human presence can be risky, and it's a debate that certainly got us thinking about the intersection of technology and safety in rail innovation. When I was chatting to one of the inventors or one of the makers of these robo dogs, they shared how they were using them in nuclear industry, particularly to clear up. So you could certainly see why they are, you know, so useful in industry, because it certainly makes it safer for workers who don't have to go into such hazardous conditions. So here we are, day two, and we kicked off with the latest rear innovation piece, Destination Revenue Growth. The report delves into the gap between government inspirations, policy and implementation on fares and ticketing, offering recommendations to drive revenue without increasing ticket prices, an interesting concept. I think we all know about the current state of UK ticketing and how it reflects a patchwork of systems developed over years, stemming from a mix of legacy and modern approaches. Factors such as rail privatisation, devolution, shifting political strategies have contributed to this fragmented approach. With this fragmented approach leading to falling short of customer expectations and leading to loss of ridership and potentially underused assets. When I think we've debated this over many years, and I've heard other webinars, particularly during the pandemic, talking about this. But is this report offering us any new solutions? Well, without going into too much detail of the report, we can put the link into the podcast, but the report laid out four recommendations. First, I guess it's stating the obvious, but we need a stable national vision, a roadmap for the future of rail retail. One could say that we probably had one that was developed under the McNulty report, but I think, as with most railway reviews, most of the recommendations have not been implemented, and we haven't really moved much more forward than where we were 10 years ago. Secondly, it said that we need to standardise the interfaces between different ticketing systems. Well, I think we can all agree on that, but I think, hasn't that been part of what's been dumped under the latest announcement by Mark Harper on ticketing? Maybe we need to delve into that a bit more. There needs to be a level playing field. Well, yes, we can all agree with that, because if you want to get into ticketing, it is really difficult to do that, because you have to go through a myriad of approvals through ATOC, RDG, to get access to ticketing. It's not just, you can't just set yourself up as a ticketing provider. One could say that maybe there's a reason for that, because we want to make sure that customers are treated fairly and that people comply, yeah, and that new retailers do comply. And then last, we've got a call for more common contractual frameworks for providing clarity and structure of mobility service providers. I think this is possibly talking a bit more in mobility as a service. You know, another concept which is proving difficulty to get grounded within systems. And as we'd have seen recently, Wim, who was one of the big trailblazers for mobility as a service, recently went into administration. So this stuff really is difficult to implement. Yeah, and it's not as easy as it would first seem. So I think we need to explore a bit more about this in our next podcast. So we're going to dive a bit more into the insight, because it's clear to me that this wasn't really a solution or a report about passengers, and that is my opinion, but one that's appealing more to the supply chain. And maybe that's part of the answer, is that it needs to speak more to the supply chain in order to deliver to the passenger. But I think we need to look more into this. The report itself also doesn't discuss about fares reform, and it does state that quite clearly, that it doesn't seek to look to fares reform. But I'm wondering, can we really separate the issues of fares reform from revenue growth and passenger satisfaction? It's a tricky balancing act, especially when the Treasury hold all the cards and are clearly one of the blockers in being able to innovate in this area. So in our next episode, we'll dive deeper into the ticketing report and explore what the Rail Innovation Group has to say about this. We'll just dissect the findings, share our thoughts and discuss how we can contribute to this ongoing debate. And then finally, from the Innovation Conference, we had more keynote speakers, which was all about that collaboration theme again and how we can learn from others. So one of the speakers was Alexandra Luck from the Department for Business and Trade, who talked about the National Digital Twin Programme, which was really exciting, and how Rail can get involved in that, because that was all about aggregating all the data we have and collaborating again. Dr. Joanna White from the National Highways Industry Highways shared her insights from their innovation programme and what we can learn from that. And then we lastly heard from Mervyn One about showcasing their cutting edge products for real-time asset monitoring. So again, all about big data. And then the day was wrapped up by a Ukraine panel, which brought together industry experts to discuss achieving efficiencies, improving reliability and unlocking innovation in the rail sector. Because clearly, as was when I spoke to our guests on the podcast, part of the theme of collaborating sustainability is that we can only learn and collaborate if we want to achieve the efficiency. So that's a wrap from the conference. It's been great sharing the highlights with you, and we can't wait to see what the next steps in the rail industry will be and what will be happening with those robo dogs. Until next time, keep on moving and keep on innovating. Catch us on the next episode of What Moves Us.
Thanks for listening to another episode of What Moves Us. We hope we moved you. For more episodes, you'll definitely want to subscribe to our channel.
Till next time.